prior to the briefing, we had with the Department of Education and Training to enable this report to be tabled or published on the ATC, and thus ensuring that we are able to have our budget debate next week. We are going to have to conclude this meeting by 11 o'clock because at 11 o'clock there's an arrangement that Basic Education is going to commence this meeting. And I'm aware that there are two of our members who serve on energy who would like to be excused after adoption of the critical minutes, and therefore I would urge members to be very focused on their work to approve the minutes. Let's commence with the minutes dated the 17th April, which is minutes involving the Department of Education and Training on the strategic and annual performance plan, read together with the draft report on the same matter.
I'm already on page 3. On page 3, the paragraph is 3.1. It was noted with serious concern that Jablin has said that deviated from the Public Finance Management Act and trade regulations and process tax actions above 500,000 without obtaining recourse. Now, if you go to the response, in response, the sector acknowledged that it deviated from the PFMA regulation by not advertising a tender for amounts above 500,000. This deviation was an extension of the lease agreement. Three quotes were obtained. I'm not sure now whether the problem is the quotes or the according to the response, three quotes were obtained. And this thing was, and I'm not being sure whether the problem is the quotation or advertising. The first part says the problem was transaction above without obtaining three codes. If you go to the next one, it says three codes were obtained. If three codes were obtained, there is no deviation. So I'm saying the first comment and the next one don't tally. It needs to be recouched so that we can say if the problem is the advert. If they say they did advertise, then there's no division.
They had two problems that are related. If there is a transaction below 500,000 rands, you must get at least three quotations. If it is above 500,000 rands, you must go on a public tender. So it would seem that they had several transactions that straddled these two requirements, non-observance of these two requirements. So I think it must be recalled to show that they had not obtained quotations where they ought to have, and they could not advertise a public tender where they ought to have. I'm sure that will be dealt with. I still recall when we debated with the wholesale and retail sector, and I'm sure the researchers can check the report. They will see what I'm talking about.
That's all of my facts
there
on that one.
Any further comments? For adoption, Khadaba, you have been very useful in the past. Useful energy, I don't know what's going on. Yes, Professor Lotto?
Chair, I propose that we adopt the minutes.
Move up for adoption. Any second? Okay, thank you. Adopted. Let's move to the second set of minutes of the 17th, relating to 17th April, relating to the department. Read together with the report thereof.
Chair, on page 2, paragraph 2, Program 1, Administration. If you read the second paragraph, it says the program provided the overall management and administration of the department. The vacancy rate of the department had been reduced from 15% in 2012-13 to 10% in 2013-14. I think the 2013-14 is a target. Not that it was reduced in 2013-14. That 10% is a target for 2013-14.
No, let that be corrected.
If you read the same paragraph, the budget constraints remain a serious challenge in filling. Now let me leave that. Let's cross over to the next page. The third line. Department targeted growth in the number of African and female students. I'd rather put the number there. Do I take you to D? The very last line. Colleges, 6 new FED college campuses to be built and 50 college councils. Do I take you to page 4? Paragraph 3.2. That bullet there. Disciplinary cases were concluded in 128 days. Currently, 90 days was the target for. I rather rephrase that sentence. Disciplinary cases were concluded in 128 days. The target for the current financial year is 90 days. That simplifies that so that It is. If you go to 3.3, that bullet there, it says the existing building did not have adequate capacity for the current staff complement, and there was no maintenance services implemented, owing to delay in moving out. I'm not sure that moving out delay is the cause of that. If you read that, that cannot be the cause. I'm suggesting that we look at that again and see if we mean what we're saying.
Yes, I think, Prof, the report by the an input by the Chief Director of Corporate Services was that when they are envisaging to leave a building, they don't maintain it, which is poor governance. I mean, if you are about to leave a building and a window cracks, you don't leave it cracked because you are going to leave the building in some future date. You must just fix it. I did not understand that articulation, but it was indeed mentioned, but it must be properly captured.
Do I take you then to the last sentence in that same page?
Yes,
that bullet. It says, the department assured the committee that construction on the NUC universities would commence in September 2013, and that a separate session would be required to present a detailed report in progress report on new universities. I'm just changing now that first line on this next page to present a progress report on new universities. Start rephrasing that.
And also the training of FET lecturers, if I can remember. A comprehensive report on the training of FET lecturers. That's what they promised to give us.
It's a matter of language now, how one understands it. If you go to 3.9 and 3.10, the committee requested for details. I'll rather request details, not for details. The committee requested for details regarding the training of ADAT. I'll take ADAT for even in the next one, 3.10. The committee requested details regarding. That's all on my plate.
Further comments? Do you want to sleep? Okay. Apparently believes in the style of what the senior manager responsible for minutes in parliament. Apparently, our comments are inconsequential. They always follow what they are taught by their seniors. I know that when people who even correct reports when they go to the ATC, I wonder if there are no mistakes on reports that go on to the ATC. But Anel, if you want to respond, you may respond. But we have said that in our previous meetings that the days must reflect there. Ma'am Power, do you want to say anything about this?
Yeah, I think these are the requirements of the committee management, because I think I also struggled particularly with the roll call of the committee. I did inquire with our manager that when a member, for example, they will say, announce that a member apologized that he or she won't be in a meeting, but when there's no apology, what do we do? How do we reflect it in the report or in the minutes? And then we were told not just to lift. So I don't know. And then they said you should find out from the committee what do they prefer, whether you should say absent without apology and then you write, or you just leave it, because
we have recorded it. If we said that we acknowledge and accept it, it must be recorded as such. But that's fine. Let's not now debate how to structure minutes. I'm hoping that we will make those improvements. Any further comments?
The same comment as in the minister here. So it will be the same thing about the target and the councils, and so it will be the same thing.
Any move of our jobs? Professor Notre has moved for adoption. Second? Thank you. We can move to the meeting of the 24th April.
Because I was coming here, so I've not read them, so I won't comment on them.
But well, after the comment by Prof that the minutes were just refused,
whether you're giving us time to read them and comment, or we can stand them over if we so agree. We can adopt them next week. As long as we've adopted the minutes for the department, then we're able to have them on the ATC enabling us to debate next week. I think we can agree that we will delete them next week. Agreed, colleagues? No, thanks. Then let's just take a break for 2 minutes and allow those that are going to the meeting in energy to leave, so that the bank sitter can prepare to have the presentation dealt with. Well, thanks.
Yes. So this wasn't in Shamsa, this was, did you just finish the name of the office chapter?
Morning.
The last one chapter this morning. Is that one of the numbers that we found out? No, next time I did it, I did the end of that chapter for you. Oh, that's me.
warmly welcome back our members. You will notice that the numbers have just been reduced. Two members had gone to NAG, and the other has gone to another commitment today. Many of our committees are running, and our members belong to several committees. I'm going to take this opportunity to welcome the bank sitter and then allow the chairperson of the board to make some introductory remarks, after which the administration will commence with the presentation. After that presentation, members will be permitted to engage with the presentation and will be gravitating towards the end of the meeting around 11 o'clock, at which moment basic education will be taking over with those members that serve in that committee. Thank you very much for coming at the opportunity, Mr. Morris.
Thank you, Chairperson, members of the committee. I would say all protocol observed, because there are people or dignitaries that are not in fact recognized. I'm sure we should also indicate that with us are members of the Department of Education. From our side is the three of us. On my extreme right is Ms. Berna Porter, who's responsible for finances. The bank sitter next to me is Mr. Makubala, who is the CEO, and I'm the chairperson, Martin Mouse. Thank you so much. We wouldn't waste time. We appreciate that you are quite pressed on time. We hope our presentation is going to be precise. What is going to do is basically to highlight, of course, what the key strategic focus areas are, which we've synthesized over the past, when we did our last strategic review sometime around mid last year. We have since been refining the documentation up to the stage where it is now, where we believe that there's still more work to be done, especially around issues of targets and so on. But we are fairly confident that setting up the strategy alignment with the expectations, I would say, from the Department of Higher Education, we've probably done a good job. It has already gone through the minister, of course, as you would know, and we've got a thumbs up on it. So I'll hand over to Mr. Makubala without any waste of time to take you quickly through the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Mahose. Members of the committee, thank you very much for the invitation to, and we feel honored to be given the opportunity to present our annual performance plan to this committee. Our vision, Chairperson, is to be recognized as a center of excellence and innovation for HR development in the banking sector. Our mission is to support transformation and people development through partnerships to enable stakeholders to advance their national and global positioning of the broader banking and microfinance industry. Our values are celebrating diversity, professionalism, innovation, teamwork, customer focus, respect, integrity. Our primary objective to enable skill development in the broader banking and microfinance sector, to implement the NSDS 3 in the broader banking and microfinance sectors, to improve the impact of bank sector's efforts in meeting these primary strategic objectives that will result in a transformed, skilled and capable workforce that to address the sector strategic objectives and national strategic objectives. These are reflected in the outputs and outcomes measured in accordance with economy, effectiveness, efficiency, and equity principles as outlined below in the performance measures of our APP. Our strategic outcomes and outcome-oriented goals are the following. Strategic goal one is research and sector skills to undertake benchmarking against national and international best practices to ensure relevant and cross and cutting-edge interventions. Goal 2, to enhance the employability of the youth through effective education and training and development initiatives. Goal 3, to provide the employed workforce that are already working inside our sector with scarce and critical skills to close those skills gaps. Goal 4, to enhance small and medium SME participation and sustainability and job creation through skill development. Goal 5, to enhance and build capacity of FETs that we work with, higher education institutions and SME providers and universities of technology to increase the national footprint and improve relevance of training interventions in response to sector's needs. Goal 6, to create a skills pool that will enable the sector to meet transformation targets as defined by the Financial Sector Charter. If you look at the skills, the critical in terms of our SSP, the sector skills plan, the following have been highlighted as scarce and critical skills. For banking, scarce are those that are enumerated on the left, but critical skills are specialist financial skills, knowledge of the sector, financial modeling, forensic investigation, risk management, and maths ability. Compliance in terms of skills and phase, which is Financial and Advisory Intermediaries Act, PFMA, FICA, and National Credit Act. Information technology to network skills, IT governance, and ERPs, the enterprise risk programs. Management and leadership in project management, quality assessment, capacity planning, logistic management, strategic and human resources and process management. These inform the program that we run and interventions that we do. Inclusive banking includes your microfinance and smaller ones. Those in that space, what the SSP has identified as critical are customer service, legislation, compliance, bookkeeping, computer literacy, IT skills, management skills, business and management skills, auditing, microfinance management, risk management, and debt collection and financial management. We have signed the service level agreement with the Department of Higher Education, and those are enumerated in terms of up to point 19, and I'll show them as we continue. I don't want to take too much of your time. We now go to the targets that we've agreed with the department are the following. For 2013-2014, this is the year that we've just started, workers entering in learnership programs, workers entering learnerships, 1,300. Workers entering that have offered bursaries, 378. Workers that people are already employed, entering skills programs, 1,040. Workers getting certificates in learnerships, 844. Certificates in bursaries, 171. Skills program, 180. Unemployed people entering learnerships, 775. Unemployed people being offered bursaries, 785. Unemployed people entering internships and workplace experience, 100. Unemployed entering skills program, 210. And the numbers are informed by the ability of the sector to give them spaces in the businesses. Learning programs, unemployed people in certificated programs, 348. Unemployed in certificated and given bursaries, 222. Unemployed people in internships and workplace experience, 48. Unemployed certificates, certificated in skills program, 168. People that are given, this is the new focus of the department and the CETA, FET graduates that are being placed in our sector, 500. FET college partnerships, including University of Technology partnerships, we have signed 6 MOUs with those. Adult education training programs entered, 100. And people that complete, which we aim that they will complete in the same year. Cooperative supported, 40 co-ops. Co-ops are now are the ones that we are now currently supporting. Financial cooperatives, savings, and so forth. Small business supported 50 SME organizations. Career guidance provided to schools. 200 schools are in our projections. Budget projections for the current year: revenue 483.618 million. It's projected to grow to 2016 to 640 million. Revenue is made up of skill development and levy income and interest income. The expenditure, we plan to spend all of that money in skill development. So there is we don't plan to have any surpluses in terms of our plan. The budget, the impact on the 2013-2014 budget. This is the same budget that we have in the previous stage on 2013-2014. Now we break that down. Income, in terms of levies received, 473,617,526. Admin cost 10%, has been allowed. It's comes to 59,202,000. And this has been approved by Treasury and the Department. Discretionary has now reduced from 50% now to 20%. Now that brings it to 118 million. Mandatory grant from 50 now to 20% is now 296 million. Interest received of that this is a projection given the current interest rate of 10 million. Total income works out back to the 483 that we spoke about in the earlier presentation. Admin expenditure 59, which is the same number that you get in the box above inside there, and the 0.5% that goes to the QCTO in terms of the new legislation is now 2.9 million. Mandatory expenditure is mandatory expenditure 287, discretionary expenditure 187 million. Discretionary levy income 118 million, mandatory grant surplus 8.8 million, interest on cash and cash equivalent 10 million, which is the same 10 million we had above. Because now there's been a change in terms of grant of the grants now, the picture now looks as follows. The admin has now been reduced by 5%, we've moved to 62 million. Discretionary moves from 20% to 49, from 49.5 to 20%, that brings it to 293. Mandatory grants from 50% to 20% moves that number to 118. Interest, the same number that we still project, the same number. The numbers remain the same. Could I go to the next page? Probably the way to understand this is to say, where are we spending our money? We're spending 34% of our funds in strategic priority in terms of youth development of the unemployed, which in total is 104 million. And that is in career guidance, that is in work readiness programs, 15 million. PIASA program, which is the intensive learnership that we provide to graduates, the FEMA, which is the program that we take matriculants and give them learnerships and inside banks, whilst we pay them a stipend for 1 year. We budgeted 15 million. Intensives, 3 million. Learnership funding window for the unemployed, so this is the funding window that we invite employers to apply for money. We've budgeted 5 million. Prison program for people with disabilities. We've budgeted 500,000. Merit bursaries for especially what's name actuarial and IT. We budgeted 4.5 million. University of Technology Work Integrated Learning Program Finding Window. We've budgeted 5 million. Math and science support to public schools program, we budgeted 30 million because the real input into our programs are people with math and science, and we are assisting schools to our money on that, and it's broken down as follows. SME support, 4.9 million. Microfinance, which is a certificate program that is run at the University of Pretoria, we're spending 8 million on that. It is mainly people from microfinance and cooperatives. Co-ops, which is really financial literacy for consumers, consumer education, 6.4 million. We run a bus that is fully equipped that goes to rural areas to train SMEs and consumers. We're spending 6.6 million on that. Work readiness program with post-matric in the SME sector, 15 million. That works out to 40 million, which is 40.995 million, which is 13% of our funds. Strategic priority area 3, which is the development of the employed, we spend 1 million in adult education. We're spending 2.5 million in 2.5 million in assisting people who are already in banks who do not have QF level 5. We are running a program called Recognition of Prior Learning. We've had huge success this year in that up to 3,000 people have actually got a portfolio of evidence assisted to do that, and it is a program that is doing very well. In total for this year, we'll be spending 25 million on RPL. QCTO curriculum development, we're spending 7 million, and which is we are the city that has been given all the banking related qualifications, and we're spending 7 million on that to assist the QCTO as a development quality partner. We also provide money for doctoral, master's, and executive programs for people who are employed, half a million. IETP, this is a program which is International Executive Development Program, where people, the banks, nominate people who they consider to be in their talent pool, that they're given international exposure at both the retail and investment banking. We spend 12 million on that. Management Development Program, which is this is a NQF Level 5 qualification that is done offered to people inside banks. We spend 9 million on that. Leadership funding for window for unemployed, 10 million we'll spend on that. Math and science support for pivotal grant funding window, we'll be spending 72 million. These are professional, vocational, technical programs that will be run, especially in IT, accounting, and so forth. We'll spend 72 million. All in all, that works up to 114 million, which is 37% of our funds. Research and benchmarking. We run skills at work awards, which we spend 200,000. Capacity building with FETs, we're spending 15% of our money on that, and that is career guidance. We run a huge program at the University of Zululand in terms of with Tutuka program to give bursaries to 100 students every a year to be trained as chartered accountants. This is a program that we think has a lot of promise, and there are a lot of those programs that are run. This one is funded by us, all in all. FET articulation, which is really to assist FETs to have the qualifications that they do to be fully articulated into university programs, we spend 2 million to assist in the curriculum development. FSCD capacity building program, which is both in terms of assisting the lecturers to improve themselves, we spend 25 million on that. All in all, that's 46 million, is 15% of our funds. To continue, the numbers, where the numbers are, microfinance certificates, 40 bursaries we're offering. Adult education, we're funding 100 people, as I've said. Cooperatives, 40 people will be funded. The cooperative trade, bank training, financial literacy, we plan to train 500 people. Mobile training solutions, as I've said, 100 will send. University of Zululand, which is the one I've referred to as the Chartered Accounting Program under the year. We also phase compliance, as I said, RPL for phase compliance. This year we'll be taking 800 for this year. The other one that I think is probably the most important for us for this year will be the Kuyasa program. We continue, the ZIMA we continue with those. The fairly new one is the assistance and working with FET programs. And that we believe should, for this year, because it's a new thing, we believe we're spending a lot of time and money. We're opening an office in Bloemfontein at Motel College, because we are the lead center for the Free State FET. The new programs that we are running for this year, RPL for FAPE, as I've said, which is the recognition of prior learning for people who are already in banks, we're spending 20.5 million this year. The merit bursaries for people, especially in actuarial science, people who come from rural areas, predominantly black people, 4 million. The ProMed Center Excellence Program we work with, it's a program started by Investec, in which we piggybacking on that one, we give them 10 million on that one. Sector Compliance Collaboration Project, we spend 3.5 million. CMD program for microfinance, in which we are assisting people who are in microfinance to get a qualification in management, which is 3.5 million we're spending on that. The next one is the Northwest Entrepreneurship Development Project. We spend 4.7 million. This is the microfinance review to look at what's in the microfinance, the program that they have. We spend 483 million. There is a program at the University of Western Cape in which people are assisted who have done articles where they are assisted to get their CA program. We're spending 22 million on that one. The one that is actually quite a new project is called the Graduate Interpretation Project. It's a project in which we are going to spend 6.5 million, in which we take people who are qualified in accounting but are unemployed. They're going to be working under mentors, and they are going to give support to SMEs. For a whole year, we'll give them a stipend. Once they do that, at the end of that period, they'll get some form of qualification, and I think they'll be employable thereafter. This year, Jefferson, we're also doing a benchmarking tour to Germany. We're taking people from the department and from FETs and people from our sector and unions to look at how the Germans are doing dual education. So this is, we're spending 2.1 million on that one. All in all, the new projects are 76 million for this year. Rural development. We have put a new emphasis in terms of getting people who come from rural areas to be able to be considered for our internship and the internship program, so that people do not say they come from Joburg or major cities, so they can get to our programs. So we make an extra effort to accommodate them in the big cities as they come. So that part, it's a new program. The mobile training solution covers all programs in terms of the bus. We are aiming at 30% of rural areas again this year. The maths science support in public schools, it's a new pilot this year. It will be aimed for, the pilot site will be KZN. Will run in six rural schools in Effingham, Harding, Itopo, Opwini, Comprehensive, Port Shepstone Secondary, and Umbilo. We're going to assist the teachers to teach better in maths, accounting, and English, so that those kids have a better chance to get into banking. We continue to run with SICA, the Center of Excellence at the University of Zululand, and we continue that program. We're supporting the University of Venda Disability Center with money in the Vembe District to assist those students with assistive devices in terms of computers and so forth, so they can actually have a better chance in dealing with the material. We, as I've said, we are the lead sitter in the Free State, and the relationship with FET colleges is something that the department has asked all sitters to do, and that relationship is going very well. We've signed MOUs, and that program is showing a lot of promise. What progress have we done so far? One, we are opening the office the 2nd of May. In Bloemfontein, and the person already appointed. We've come to an agreement with Motheo College. It will be a center in which we will assist people from FET colleges to be placed inside banks and give them career guidance. The approval of the post-school FET capacity building project, we have spent $25 million, as we've said, aimed at activating 6 regional public FETs to become accredited to deliver our program so that we increase the share of FETs, of programs that are run through public FETs. We are grateful for the assistance we are receiving from the Chief Directorate in the Free State Education Department to assist us to have meetings with all the college principals, and that is a formal program to assist them so that we can inform them in terms of the quality of their program and what the banks require and what is the latest development. Other challenges that are being addressed refer to the bank sector presence in terms of geographical and sectoral challenges. The majority of our stakeholders, unfortunately, are not in the Free State, so we are working through that. The perceived function and infrastructure of the career office in bank sector for our sector, that is in Bloemfontein. We continue to match our operational requirements and of the FET college infrastructure. The FETs, the government is spending a lot of money on FETs, so we're trying to make sure that there is a link between what the sitters do and the FETs, so at least there is synergy between what we do. We also had a meeting with the minister in which the priorities were we agreed with these priorities. So ourselves and the Cooperative Bank Development Agency, BDA, we undertook a benchmarking trip to Malawi and Kenya in December last year, in which we looked at how those countries have succeeded in developing their cooperative sector a lot further than we've done in our country. We're working on that model, and we think we have something that could prove useful for our country. We have two projects in cooperative financial institution, a project aimed at members of cooperative financial institution addressing financial literacy, financial management, and cooperative operations. We also offer bursaries to staff of co-ops to complete a certificate in co-op financial institution in the Center of Inclusive Banking at the University of Pretoria. Further initiatives are planned for 2013 and 2014 with the cooperative financial institution in respect of internships and workplace experience linked to the graduate placement project, so that we can get graduates also placed in microfinance. Banksita continue to support the youth development initiative as reflected in the 2013-2014 annual performance plan through learnerships, bursaries for graduates, and new graduate placement for the current year. That involved FET college graduates, something that we have not done. We placed this year a target of 500 graduates to give them through our discretionary grant budget to make sure that they also get an opportunity of being placed and get a stipend. The program assisting people who have completed completed degrees and diplomas that are unemployed. We're taking 30 of them, as I've said, and we're spending $6.5 million in terms of their stipend and also their mentorship program. Chairperson, that will be all from us.
Thank you very much. Members, I can engage with the presentation. Just to break the ice on my part, 2 weeks back, I was invited to address at UNISA. It was a cold morning. I got much more cold when they told me that they hadn't seen any sitter in their university, you see. And then I did promise Professor Baloyi that I'm going to converse with the CEOs of the cities to visit their place just to see as to what sort of problems they could find their students in. I mean, I got shocked because I was speaking so well of the cities to say we've got 21 cities that are now working in collaboration with institutions. Then they start writing from that moment. And they were writing questions. I thought they were interested in the information to say, which cities are you talking about? We've never seen a city here. We don't even seem to know what a city is. Then I recoiled into a banana, you see. Now, you are going to assist us by going to those institutions, interact with them and see how best you can help. I mean, our country requires statisticians, chariots and mathematicians, all those people, and we know that if you focus on that, you can do us a great deal to assist the country. Members, Professor Lottrit?
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, you go over then, we'll follow.
First of all, just good morning to Mr. Makabalo, also from the Free State. I would just like perhaps, I'm interested in the program that you have in assisting schools with maths and science. If you could perhaps just elaborate on that, how you go about it. Are the teachers put on specific courses, or what is the nature of your assistance there? And Venture, I think it is encouraging that there is collaboration with the FET colleges. I think that is very important. Maybe the university one is lacking, but with FETs and specifically then with Mateo College, I think that is encouraging. And in that regard, I would just like to ask, how do you go about coordinating the content? Because FET colleges have their own content, and it is now within the national department. They report to national department. What is the kind of impact that you do have on their curricula? Thank you.
thank you, Shepherdson, and good morning, colleagues. Thanks for the presentation. Start with a comment, Shepherdson. It's possibly our mistake as a committee, I'm not very sure, that we don't seem to have a common template on how this is done. And my question relates to when I see their targets, I don't learn much from their targets, because I would have expected, you know, this is my 2013-2014 target, but this was my previous target. It tells us, it informs us whether there is growth or whether there is a decline. I can't blame them for not doing that. Possibly we haven't told them. But for me, it would have made a lot of sense. I think partly covered as he went on, because this thing of capacity, and as the capacity of FET colleges, we have been complaining about it, and I think we have said this even in other committees, where you have state-owned companies doing their own training, and you say to them, I think the best way of making an impact in the sector, while you also deal with students, look at the lecturers, build capacity there, because then it has a multiplier. So I wanted to, besides the Free State, where else can we see this? Which FET colleges are they involved in? The same applies to the issue of the math and science. I see the pilot in KwaZulu-Natal. But I would also like to, besides this part of, because I see they're spending $3 million, which is quite a tidy sum, I must add. I'm not sure that the $30 million is for the pilot, or the pilot is something else and there is a $30 million. In other words, where can we find this project? The last one, Shepherdson, is really a balance between your mandatory grants and discretionary grants. I see they're talking of a reduction in mandatory grant. I'm trying to refresh my memory and say mandatory grants are monies that are claimed by the employers. for training in terms of the Skills Development Act. And if the money increases, it means the employers are not claiming. And if the employers are not claiming, it may mean the employers are not training. So I just want to check in this sector in particular, how big is this problem of employers? You know, they just submit their WSPs, and then from there they've complied with legislation. You know, for them, submission is almost like paying tax, and then they don't come back and claim this money. I just wanted to check. It is related to discretionary grants. Oh, we love discretionary grants. If the employers don't claim after some time, the money is swept over. And then you can deal with your unemployed and all those things. But I guess it defeats the purpose. It defeats the purpose if the employers do not claim the money. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. My first question relates to internships and skills programs. I just want to understand what the difference is. For instance, there is a number 48 for internships and a number 168 for skills programs. And then my second question relates to the 10 million interest. How much stays in the bank to make such a big interest? And then on the issue, on your expenditure, I heard your expenditure of 34%. I also heard your expenditure of 13%. I also heard your expenditure on FTEs of 15%. I didn't hear one or two of the percentages. Can you please fill me up? And then on the issue of adult education and training, I just want to find out who else is in that space. And then lastly, Chair, I would like to hear more about RPL. I've heard that there is a portfolio of evidence that creates a situation where one gets a particular certificate or a particular qualification. Can I hear more about that? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I'll go back to the targets, the numbers that you have shown there. And one would have appreciated if we knew what the scope or the extent of the problem is that we are trying to address by putting down those targets. For instance, if you are targeting workers entering learnership, 1,300 workers certificated in skills programs, 180. Now, those numbers, to be meaningful and to be appreciated, one would have appreciated if they were preceded by the problem, the scope of the problem that you are trying to address. What limits those targets? Is it budgetary constraint that we can't go beyond the numbers that are there, or the numbers were just arbitrary chosen? If one could hear more on that one, to appreciate the work and your contribution into the skills development.
Thank you.
pay attention to. I want to pick up from where you, from the last question. One thing that perhaps you did not pay much attention to is, and I think it's understandable that the questions are being raised about format and so on, because it gets very confusing, perhaps if you have not dealt with these processes from the beginning. We have had the benefit of developing the document and going through the trends in the past and so on. And we should apologize, perhaps, for that oversight on our part, whether we were guided or not. I will start with the target so that then perhaps everything else might fall into place. One of the things that we picked up when the new council was appointed was the issue about targets, regardless of whether the strat plan was focusing on what. That there seemed to have been a trend where we would always surpass targets every year. We started asking ourselves that very question. Have we set the targets too low? Are we focusing on the right spaces and so on? And that debate has been going on for the past 2 years. Part of what we've decided to do towards resolving that particular issue was to, first of all, as I said, I think in the opening, get some consensus on what is it that we're going to be focusing on as key priorities, which is what we presented to you today. Secondly, we talk targets before we even talk about numbers. What is going to be informing those targets quantitatively, but also in terms of geographic target, and that's where the research issue comes in. Whether it's the rural urban divide is something else, but what we realize is that given what we're trying to do and the historical background of the banking sector, let's say bank sector as a whole in the country, there's obviously been a general concentration in the urban areas. And if we are to spread out to the rural areas and reach out to the rural poor, what is it that we're going to do? Secondly, how are we going to do that? And in terms of products, how do we make sure that we are responsive? Hence our decision to begin to increase more investment on understanding the profile of our country geographically in terms of population through research. So it's work that is going to be going on. It's work that we started to do, which hopefully will bring out better targets. So yes, the issue of targets is partly, is not thumbs up, right? I should rest assured. It's partly as an effort to improve on previous targets, trying to jack them up, also to look at the spread countrywide, but also it's also inhibited by budget constraints, we must appreciate. The scope of work that we are supposed to do is quite diverse, both within those who are already employed and those who are not yet employed. And you'd appreciate that part of our work also has an indirect impact in terms of increasing the number of bankable people or the number of unbanked, increase the number of banks from the unbanked. So by reaching out, whether through alternative banking and all forms of banking, we also have an indirect banking, making sure that people do get that access. UNISA, I take it to be a directive. I don't think we have to respond. I guess Mr. Makubara takes that as a challenge. We will take it as a challenge as a bank sector to make sure that we reach out as we're reaching out to other universities. We've done a lot of work, in fact, on universities which have not reported to, and that's why I say perhaps the issue about the historical trend and where we are and where are we moving and how are we moving is something that we might have overlooked. We've interacted with almost every university in the country, and I'm stand to be corrected, but as far as I know, we've been in the Northwest. We've been extensively we've done a lot of work with Fort Hare, Nelson Mandela, University of Zululand. Almost every university in the country we've touched, whether it's University of Limpopo, University of Venda. In fact, one thing that we did not report, which we might in fact require your assistance, talking about increasing the number of graduates and qualified skilled people for the financial services sector. We're trying to support the University of Venda with getting accreditation, as we have done with the University of Zululand, for them to be able to produce CAs. We've been trying to broker a partnership between the university and the University of Pretoria for the University of Pretoria to provide the mentorship that is necessary. We've had a bit of snag that we've hit. We've elevated the matter to the Department of Education for them to intervene. Hopefully we'll get a breakthrough soon and get to something there. On FET colleges, you will give more detail in terms of which ones exactly we dealt with. We've recognized that particular factor around the making sure that the quality of the lecturers in university in FET colleges does in fact improve. So the investment goes directly towards that, making sure that we get to that. How do we to ensure that content is informed. For us, the primary objective is to make sure that what they produce does meet the standards and the requirements of the financial services sector. So whether it is standard or not, the guidelines should in fact be meeting the requirements of those who are ultimately going to employ these people. But also we should not forget that part of it may sound like a pipe dream as it stands now. Part of it is about making sure that we begin to produce people that are going to have an appetite to work even in financial cooperatives. One thing that surprised us last year when we were looking at data from financial cooperatives was that you would find within that sector an actuary working within that particular sector. So unlike the public perception that was that you don't have qualified people, you don't have sophisticated people in that market, there seems to be a growing appetite in the country to develop that sector by entrepreneurs themselves and by professionals themselves. Hence, we would want to focus on that moving forward too. On math and science, you'll give you detail on where. Of course, that amount of money can go to an area. We would want to spread it across, so you'll give you more detail on that. The issue about interest rates, Ben, I'm not necessarily Max would respond to. But if we are told that we've generated much interest, we appreciate the recognition. All that we're trying to do is to make sure that there's some kind of prudent financial management in terms of what way we choose to invest the money. On a regular basis, management reports to council on the performance of those investments for us to monitor if we're doing good or not. So I take it to be an accolade. We appreciate that pat on the back. RPL, you get more clarity. I just want to pick up 2 points, perhaps which also have linkage with the FET College, and that would explain. Ordinarily, if the press was to pick up Bank Sita is spending 2 million rand taking people to Germany on a dual education learning expedition, it would sound like it's a waste of money. The RPL program started a few years back, year before last, we undertook a tour to the Netherlands. As a result of that tour, we were able to sensitize quite a number of players, both within the banking sector, from SACWA and everybody that you could think of that is supposed to be a player in RPL, including the department. Since then, there's been much greater appreciation of the work that we've done. By the way, it's a pilot that has been working on for quite some time that is simply getting expanded now. That tour served a lot of purpose, both in terms of informing the players, the key players, but also as a result of that tour, we were able to do 2 things when we came back. In fact, as we came back, we had a commitment from the Dutch government to fund our RPL program. At that point, we reported and recommended to the Department of Education that greater focus and perhaps some kind of a ministerial task team be established for RPL. Probably you know about it. The RPL task team has been in place. It's chaired by our CEO together with other players. And since our expedition, other CETAs have followed suit. The CETA on transport has also gone out on a similar expedition, and they're pursuing RPL. The dual education trip is meant to do exactly the same thing, and some of the key beneficiaries are going to be people like in the FET colleges, for instance. So it's all about that, taking the same approach, people that have an interest, that have a direct bearing on this program, getting them exposed to what other countries are doing, and trying to adapt, not necessarily copy what those people are, what we can do back in the country, being conscious, of course, our own circumstances and constraints.
Thank you. Chairperson, your question about UNISA is that our starting point was working with historically disadvantaged universities, in terms of where the greatest need was in terms of our investment, and that's how we've done. We've been working with the School of Banking at UNISA with Professor Mpofu for a number of years. So a number of banks, we support in many ways. We also run what we call a doctoral funding window, in which people who are teaching in the science in the areas that is accounting, economics, and so forth, that we assist them in terms of getting PhD students, because
PhD research so that they can teach in the program that we do. And UNISA has benefited more than once. Two, the MES project, the question was how does that work? Yes, we're going to spend, we're assisting teachers first to increase their own ability to teach better in maths, accounting, and English in black schools. And the reality that we are faced with that majority of kids in black areas take math literacy, which is not accepted into the BCom program or the actuarial program, unfortunately. So the reality is that the teachers, I'm not an educationist, the pressure the schools have is getting pass rate up, so they go for the easier option. So what we are doing is to assist those teachers, incentivize them and assist them to do that, and also to take their better students, work hard on an accelerated program so that they actually do better in math. That program has worked very well. The Investec program is working very, very well. Those students have, of course, other people are taking them from that. But finally, that we should be increasing the pool so that other people take them, engineers and medicine, whatever. It's fine. But I still maintain that as a country, we need to improve the quality of maths teaching from grade 10 to grade 12. the question is what are we doing with FETs, the impact of FOSAM, whether we assist them with curriculum development. We have come to discover that, especially the bad name FETs have had, is that people who teach in FET colleges, by and large, have been people who do not have, normally, anybody who teaches should have at least qualifications twice more than two levels above the people that you are teaching. And that has been the problem with FET colleges. So we are assisting them in terms of assisting the lecturers, funding them, giving them scholarships so that they can improve their ability to teach. The first. Number two, also to assist the FET colleges, and they are not all bad. Some FET colleges have very good programs, and what we are doing is that we are paying for a lot of research in terms of Islamic banking. A lot of these programs that are currently in banking now, IT and so forth. So those programs that we have paid for, we are making those available to FET colleges so that those programs are now offered through FET colleges rather than private providers. So that's what we are doing in that space. The question was also the percentages that we gave in terms of our programs. If you were to add those percentages, as we said, if you add those numbers, they work up to 99%, and the 1% is under the research program. So the percentages, Bank Cedars, youth development is 34%. 34% of our total budget, which amounts to 104. Inclusive SME development is 13%. If you add that, you get to 47. You add for additional 37% that we spend on the development of people who are already in the sector, you come to 84%. You add additional 15% that we spend on FET colleges, that gives you 99%. So all in all, it's just a division of the amount of money that we have. The question was also asked in terms of what do we mean by that the mandatory grants have changed. What has actually happened this year? There was change from the department in terms of there's first the 1% of payroll that people have gets paid over to SARS, and SARS then pays that over, takes 20%, goes to National Skills Authority. 20% that gets paid over to CETAS. Of that, those companies that submit their BSPs get 50% of that money back, of 50% back. But that has been changed now from 50% to 20% to make sure that the programs are not just, they don't get that money, but forces them to do pivotal programs, which is professional, intensive, vocational, and technical training. So to make sure, in so doing, they can actually claim more than the 50%. They can even go above that. But so that people we move away from people doing short courses that do not lead to any qualification. People can have qualifications that are portable to other sectors. And initially, there was a lot of unhappiness what is the sector doing? Our sector, and to be honest about banking, banks spend a lot more money than the 1% on training themselves. And on average, between 4 and 5% of payroll is spent by banks themselves in terms of training. I mean, there, some of them have got training centers that are that rival universities in terms of investment that they've done. So this sector is, because it's a white collar sector, and it is that accolade and recognition has been given in terms of South African banks, and banking is considered among the best in the world, and that is because of the quality of the training that the banks have been given. A question was asked in terms of what is the difference between internships and skills programs. Internships are those programs that run over a year, in which people get, we give them that diploma, we take matriculants, and up to now we've trained about 5,000 people, and about 70 and 80% of them are employed inside banks as we speak. What happens is that we take them for that year, the banks, we pay them a stipend. So the banks give them an opportunity to train inside banks, and at the end, the banks have the first right to employ them. So what happens is a person with matric now gets an opportunity to have work experience, and whilst doing that, gets a certificate in banking. In banking. So that two things, he gets experience and gets a diploma beyond what he already had. Then we have a program that we run, which is for graduates called Kweasa. We also do exactly the same, and that has been very, very popular inside banks. Those people have been taken, and that is countrywide. It's not only in Gauteng, it's countrywide. The chairman has responded on the interest, and the question was to answer on RPL. RPL says, I think it is. We are probably the leading sitter in terms of application of RPL. The reason was because we had a banning platform in terms of FAFE, because there was a point where legislation in terms of FSB said people without NQF level 5 cannot give advice to people in terms of that act, cannot give direct advice to a person if you don't have that qualification. The problem that we had, especially in rural areas, people who have been working in banks for almost 20 years without qualification, they got into banks with standard 8 and so forth, and they actually know how to do the work, and they've been trained inside in programs inside banks, but there was no formal mechanism of making sure that they get credit and recognition of what they've done. So RPL formalizes that process in terms of what you call credit accumulation and transfer mechanism, in which now we have now perfected that in terms of our sector. We understand how to do that. We've got service providers. We've trained advisors, 25 of them. They are now working, assisting people to produce their portfolio of evidence. And people not on, but remember what people do with RPL. RPL, you finally get a qualification or part of a qualification, you can continue to study further. The question was also asked in terms of what, if we have been better, if we are saying what problem are we trying to address with our interventions. At the beginning of every year and continuously, we do what we call a sector skills plan. So we take all the WSPs that come from banks and microfinance, we assess them, and we go and do a research in terms of what jobs are we struggling to recruit. And banks go to regularly to government to get work permits to import the skills from outside the country. Based on this, on that, we are unable to get those skills in the country. So we continue to take that space, that research, and then continue to fashion our programs to address those skills. That's what informs our strategic plan. I don't know if there's anything that I've. Oh, the question was, what are we doing with FETs in terms of assisting them? We are assisting FETs in terms of there are other sitters. All the sitters have been given assigned to FETs. There are 52 FETs in the country, and we are not only operational or active in the Free State. We also have interest in throughout the whole country, but in those areas, other sitters are lead sitters, and we follow and work under their and under facilitator for AZN. So we work with them in terms of they start the process, and then especially for programs that are relevant to our sector, to say to make sure that those programs are especially their curriculum is actually updated to meet the requirements of our sector. Thank you, Chair.
The government will sweep. We are left with 15 minutes. I'm sure we have about 10 minutes to conclude on our engagement.
We will, Chair. Let me start by some of the issues that came as they responded. The first is on all these training programs we've got, what is the rate of absorption? If we say we trained 5,000, perhaps even ever since, can we be able to say 80%, 60% of these have been taken, or they're just somewhere and we can't even trace them? Do we have some checking system to say we have since trained the following and this is where they are? Or if they are not there, where are they? Something like that. On RPL, we'll be interested as well understanding the success rate there. Often, people undergo these programs and they don't necessarily succeed, you know, because of other challenges entailed in such programs as we take them through. So we may want to know what the success rate is in that regard. Chair, in terms of the landscape of the environment the Banksita operates, part of what they say is their challenge is that on the legislative environment, they are contending with various or diverse pieces of legislation. Are there real challenges there, either some contradictions between the legislation, or what is it? That it's just their number that you feel you have to be complying with quite a number, or you think there's something we can do ourselves in that regard so that there are clear recommendations that may be coming from yourselves. I would want to understand more on the inclusive banking, the IB. It is said to be resource challenged, that they can't necessarily funds to invest in skills development locally. I want you just to expand on that, to see what are these challenges, what is it that is being done or could be done to deal with that. I'm not sure, Chair, whether I should combine this one with the sort of failed Zanzibar account, which was meant to take on board the unbanked masses of our people into this program. Part of the challenge is, of course, that low income earners or poor people generally. And it is said that the result or the reason why that would fail is unsustainable charges and poor maintenance. And I'm not sure whether we should then subject those people to this challenges, or the bank sitter should do something in that particular regard. But I'm trying to combine the two, to saying if there are challenges, for instance, even in terms of language, people can't interact with the needs or requirements. If I'm a farmer somewhere, but a client of the bank, I've got livestock, I do sell from time to time, I've got money, but I can't open an account and interact with the you know, financial houses. How do we intervene in that particular regard and ensure that those kind of people, at least their monies are safe and they understand what they are actually doing? The last but one, Chair, there are programs, several programs, and I won't necessarily confine this to one, like on the certificates for management development,
and there could be others, but which are for now run in few provinces. Is there any plan to make sure they are nationwide, or what is the plan in that regard? The service level agreement that has been signed so far, the 2012-2013 one, has there been another signed for the 2013-2014, or there is still something in the process? The very last chair, I know you are under pressure of time. Yeah, it's whether some cities do partner with NSFAS. Are you considering partnering with NSFAS for some programs and ensuring that you don't just administer that by yourself throughout, or you think there's no room for such an engagement? Thank you.
Place to Bazaars, management of Bazaars and graphics.
Thank you, Chairperson. Three quick ones. Well, the first one is a comment in appreciation. And I say this against the background of the reports that you get from other sitters. I mean, I can confirm, we got it in reports, that if there is a sitter that has done well on RPN, it is the bank sitter. Mr. Makwalo referred to people working in banks, also challenged with people working in insurances, who were regarded as unqualified and could have lost their jobs but for the intervention of the bank sitter. And at times I ask myself, don't they share information? I mean, I'm a teacher myself, and I know that in 2008 there was an OSD signed. Teachers are supposed to do RPL. Not a single teacher has been assisted. Many teachers, when you talk about RPL, they tell you about research. They are still going to research. So many years after the passing of the Skills Development Act. So our appreciation there. Chairperson, in their targets and what they want to do, nothing is said about corporate governance in this city. Does it mean that they have arrived? I don't know. I mean, you heard last week a sitter was saying their target is not to have a disclaimer this year. Disclaimer of opinion, and we say, "Ah, come on, you must be more ambitious." So they are not saying anything about corporate governance and the training of board members. Have they arrived? But lastly, I'm repeating what I said. Let me say, I come from the Limpopo province. And when we are in the constituencies, when we say the bank sitter is assisting schools and whatever, can I point at a school in Limpopo and say, that is the example that are being assisted with math and science? And I'm saying this as a teacher myself, somebody who became a math teacher by default. And I mean, for the best part of my teaching life, I was teaching math, having no training in math, by the way, at university. So can I point at a school in Limpopo, a school? Can I point at an FET college in Limpopo that is benefiting? I'm using Limpopo as an example. Because, I've heard of two provinces. It's not bad to say we're only doing it just for so that we know where to find your programs. Where are these programs? Thanks.
One more question. My office was approached by some people from the this sector. I don't know maybe the insurance sector, but I'll ask you, maybe you'll give me clarity if you have the answer, that people in the funeral cover or the insurance sector were facing unemployment because they were going to be going through some tests, written in English and Afrikaans only, and if you fail, you're going to be disallowed to continue working in that sector. And I think they were frustrated and hoping that we could then intervene and see how we help those people not experience what they were anticipating, unemployment and so on. If you know about such a matter, how is it being handled?
I'm asking this because today we're supposed to have banking CETA, the HR and the CETA, and we know they are related, and they would be able to better clarify the issues, and unfortunately, for want of time, we could not have the other CETA. Exactly 6 minutes to answer, but we are giving you 4 minutes to answer. If you take over and somebody arriving there, then I will say your time has expired. If somebody just enters there to say I must stop the meeting because they want to use the venue, then we stop.
Thank you, Chairperson. The question is that the people that we have trained in Letsema and Kuyasa, we actually have a tracking mechanism of where they are. We report on that on an annual basis. And up to now, people that have been trained, about 70, between 70 and 80% of them are working inside banks. The rest have not found work, and others went to other sectors. The question was that we have challenges, legislative challenges. Yes, Chairperson, we do have. We want to work with ethics colleges, for instance. The PFMA says they actually must be on our database, they must be accredited, and all those things they don't have. We're working with them to make sure that they actually can work with them within the PFMA constraint. FET colleges and universities routinely do not tender for work when you put it in the paper. You can also understand that nobody wants to do additional work for the same pay that they're getting. So they don't get commission, so they're not particularly bothered. So we are actually going out of our way to target. When we get a private provider, say, you must work with an FET as part of the conditions. So that's what we are trying to do. The second one is the provincial footprint. Yes, Chairperson, we're trying our level best to be national, but we are constrained by availability of banks, spaces and training spaces inside banks. We've been very fortunate in terms of people like Capitec, an African bank, who have been expanding into rural areas in a big way. They've been employing people and giving us spaces to place people in those areas. It's not ideal. It is the reality that banking has had an urban bias. But with microfinance, it is actually growing also in rural areas. We are trying to follow that in terms of giving those people in opportunities in those areas. The question was NSFAS. Yes, we've given NSFAS 3 million last year. This year we are in negotiation the amount of money that we are going to give, because there was a shortfall from NSFAS that we are busy negotiating. We actually, the way we want to work with them is that we actually want to have an agreement with a student, because in terms of our funding and our corporate governance, when we give somebody a bursary, we should be able to say this person is doing subject related to banking, and at the end we actually can first give the banks their first preference in appointing this person. So failing which the person is then free. But we actually do not want to put money into a hole that they can disperse on their own. That's where we stand. CMG and other the question was, can we give the schools that we have assisted? Yes, we can give that, and I do not have the list now, but we do have a list of where we've been. What we've actually done is that we actually do not deal with schools directly, but we do career advice. Especially, we've been up to Peta Homo in outside towards this place, Sukukun. We've been to those areas. We can point those schools that yes, we've been there. The teachers have been trained. But first, the teachers who are doing what we call guidance usually do not understand careers in banking. So we go and create a career guide in terms of the careers that are in banking. We go and train them in terms of what are the careers that we have in banking. And so they actually can be able to give students, because most students, especially in rural areas, do not know that there is an investment banker, there is an actuary, there's all of those kind of things that happen at the back end of a system of banking. These people see a teller, they say that is what banking is all about. So we're trying to say banking is a cool profession for people to aspire to work in. And if you go now anywhere in our country, you can go to the most remotest of places. I mean, I've been to Kakamas and Famous in the Northern Cape. The transformation in the banking hall, or the people behind the tills, from white to black, has been remarkable, and that has been because of
sector in which there is capital adequacy, there are rules, and also with Basel III, but it's difficult to start a bank. I mean, there is no black-owned bank in the country, and it's precisely because of that reason. So yes, there are a lot of people who are starting co-ops and microfinance, and I'm not talking about the people who are keeping people's cards and ID. I'm not talking about those. Those are outside those things. Those are people we want to discourage big time. But we're talking about people that are working within the framework that we assist with training and giving to understand what is the requirement and their obligation in terms of National Credit Act, in terms of reckless lending and indebted people beyond their ability to pay.
And I know that time is a bit tight. One of the things relating to microfinance and corporate developments, what you should indicate as to is just we've forged much more closer working relationship with the cooperative bank development agency. One in terms of supporting their own programs, but one of the things also for us to get to understand more exactly what they do so that we could in fact invest more towards that direction is to deal with the very point, the shortfall of Mzansi. If Mzansi is not there, what is it that we can try and do alternatively to provide some kind of a channel for people to be able to bank some money in whatever form. But one of the things that we picked up also, that is a constraint. And I would want to say, a question was asked whether, which I'll be going to respond to in my last comment, whether everything on corporate governance was fine. I'll raise another point and say, perhaps beyond corporate governance, we may receive an allocate here, an accolade here, an accolade there. But our recognition on our part is that it's work in progress. There's a lot of work that still needs to be done. Just, first of all, in terms of understanding the environment, we believe, yes, there's a lot of work that has been done, there are people that have been absorbed, all the successes that we've been telling you about. But there's a deeper need for us to understand much more in detail what the complexities around the banking sector are in this country and what we can do to facilitate a further transformation of the sector. That is a key idea that we're moving towards. So the research that we've taken a decision to undertake moving forward, for instance, is to map exactly where are these cooperatives cooperative banks, where are these microfinance institutions, where are the banks on the map geographically in South Africa. What does it mean in terms of population concentration? What can we do in terms of intervention programs? We should then get back, by the way, to the targets that we were talking about. That's what it means to us. Because then the rest of targeting will still be pie in the sky unless it is followed by some kind of statistics and is empirically, in fact, founded in our analysis. That's the first part. And the other thing that I'd want to raise relates to the last point. I think there was an issue around language. I guess it was just a comment on Mzansi that maybe some of the things are language constraints. There was an issue that was raised, I think, perhaps relating to that about people in the insurance industry. We may not be able to respond to it since it's not our mandate. But, of course, the whole training for FACE, the RPL program for FACE, was to make sure that we deal with that shortfall. And as far as we know from the board side, is that at any given time, our team from the management side is ready to assist and collaborate with those CETAs that we need some assistance as far as looking at our experience and perhaps taking that into their own sector. On corporate governance, yes, there are no targets there. It's like you've been spying on some of our meetings when you say that. Not that there's a crisis, there's no crisis per se. We believe as a council we'll be one of those that are lucky that found a system that was running to serve. But what we have decided to do is to make sure that we don't remain complacent. We recognize that the skill levels within the council may not necessarily be the same, but also there are key issues relating to the structure of the board itself, the workings of the committees. That is the focus of our attention at the moment. We have part of the request that we've made to the Department of Education is that they allow us to match the EXCO as provided in the Constitution with the Governance and Strategy Committee. For one reason, if you have too many committees, given the number of council members that you have, you may not be able to deal with all issues in detail. It is just to make sure that there's some kind of alignment between
those issues that may be ex-co strategic issues and which we believe cannot in fact be divorced from governance and strategy issues. So the one thing that we have done quite recently, just recently, we commissioned an appraisal, board appraisal by the IOD. We just received the report last month. We are going to be going into a structuring session in June, in fact, where in preceding that even, we are going to tease out the issues. In fact, this is not even the first one. Shortly after our appointment, we had about an IOD training session, an orientation program, basically, for an orientation training session for new councillors. And followed by that, therefore, is this board appraisal that we're talking about. So almost halfway through our term, how far are we? What are the constraints? What are the challenges that we're supposed to deal with? Out of that report, we're going to be teasing out issues that are going to be central to the corporate governance agenda in terms of building capacity and sustaining our capacity within the city. Those are the issues. So they are not targets there per se, but I can assure you definitely that when you get to the next draft time, you will see a much more greater detail as far as the governance issues are concerned. Thanks.
We asked about the service level agreement. I don't remember it having been responded.
Hello, you want to take that?
I'm Mabuza Ngubane from the Department of Higher Education. I would love to respond on that, but if the member can repeat the question.
The service level agreement, is it in place between the CETA and the department, or are you still processing them? We know last year there was, or if put differently, if the service level agreement is not concluded and the CETAs operate without one, they are going to have an audit queries. Therefore, their governance will be put in bad light. Do we have that in place now? That's what members would like just to know.
Yes. We have just received the SLAs from all the CETAs, and we are processing them at present, and all CETAs have submitted the SLAs. They are with us. That is the answer. Thanks.
On this aspect that the CEO mentioned of maybe the universities and the FETs not being on your database and that causing challenges, last year we favored with a copy of a framework for the National Skills Fund in terms of which they make disbursements and so on, in terms of grants, and we hope that your CETA should be able to have a similar framework for yourself. If you'd like to give any grants, to give any boundaries to people, so that your discretion should be exercised within some context of an approved, written, objective policy framework. It must not be that today chiefs won and the board became happy and immediately they called people for boundaries. The other day it loses. They then say the boundaries are terminated and so on. There must be a framework. But that's all that South Africa requires, a framework. Not everything goes through a tender. To offer a bursary, you don't issue a tender. You issue an invitation for applications within a framework. That's all is required. So there should not be that lapse when we come to committee to say there's no policy or there's some process that is not followed. We always would like to advise, because the portfolio committee only gets happy when fewer of our institutions go to SCOMPA. Our duty is to ensure that our CETAs, our 50 FET colleges, I could hear that there are now 52, but I will not ask on that, because there may be improvements. our 50 public FET colleges account for the monies that had been given to them, our universities, because that makes us happy. The committee would like to speak in a happy mood all the time. You might have noticed that we are not very negative on the sitters if they do work, if they really have partnerships with our FETs, if they offer bursaries. We are beginning to appreciate the work being done. But once they are antithetical to the general direction of the committee, that's when there will be a collision course and they will start calling you more frequently and speaking in a way that makes people unhappy when they live here, that the committee has been very critical of our work and appreciative of the niche areas that we are focusing on, where we're making a strong impact to improve the lives of our people. I think I must take this opportunity to thank the chairperson of the board and the officials from the department and the CETA for having come to make such a wonderful presentation to us. We hope that the SLA will be concluded between the CETAs and the department, and that in this year there will not be approved at the end of the fiscal year. So the committee says to the department, you cannot approve this thing long after we have approved the budget of the department. Next week, on the 8th, the committee is going to debate with the minister in the National Assembly for the approval of our budget as a department and all its entities. We would like, as we debate, to be assured that indeed the service level agreements are consonant with our agenda as a country and they've been properly approved. We are not going to be happy if the department would tell us that they were not happy with those SLAs, therefore they will be approved next year, because then we're going to have a coalition course with the department, starting with the minister, with the deputy minister, with the department, including the CFO here, who is always very consistent in our meetings, and we appreciate that so much, the CFO of the department. Takes us to the end of the meeting. I appreciate members for coming. While having a debate the next week, let's prepare. Let's say no, his colleagues, that Mponjani, it's not bad if you can tell me what your angle is so that I can respond in advance. It's how usually engaged. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Just one pressing thing, just an appeal. Perhaps you would have noted. 2 years ago, we came to Parliament, I think it was in a similar briefing, and we sensitized you about the abnormal trends of rise in revenue with allocations coming from Treasury. We lived with that for almost 2 years. We were only hit last month, by directly coming from Treasury, indicating that there have been improper allocation policies. There was money that was allocated to us that was not supposed to have been allocated to us. The net effect for the bank sector was the withdrawal of 143 million rand. As a result, you can imagine what it would do in terms of dislodging the operations of the city. We're just appealing that greater focus be paid to monitoring that particular issue, that at least there's some kind of tighter processes, because we need predictability for our planning. Thank you so much.
I think our researchers will lead the team to investigate what happened in SARS in terms of collecting of monies that are meant for our CETAs, and then if there are challenges that are now in Treasury, then we can call them to the full committee to come and clarify us. In the event of very serious shortfall, we think there should be engagement with the National Skills Fund to look at those areas that we think are very key for your sector, and then we are always having an open door policy. If there are challenges, you can seek our intervention, and then we'll do so effectively. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.